The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para-X Radio Network. The opening song tonight was called The Kitchen Hearth, and the hearth is the heart of many homes. Lots of magic takes place in the kitchen, whether it be in food preparation or potions or medicinal remedies or spells. And my guest tonight is author Ellen Everett Hopman, and Ellen is a teacher of herbalism, or has been since 1983. And is a professional member of the American Herbalist Guild. A Druid initiate since 1984, she's a Druid priestess, a founding member of the Order of the White Oak, Archdruidess of the Druid Clan of Dana, and a member of the Grey Council of Mages and Sages, as well as being an author of several books, including A Druid's Herbal for the Sacred Earth Year, and the book we're going to be talking about this evening, Secret Medicines from Your Garden, Plants for Healing, Spirituality, and Magic. Welcome, Ellen.
Hello, from snowy New England.
I'm not even going to tell you it was 76 here today. Now,
oh,
you didn't, yeah, don't throw a spell on me or a curse. Just, you know, I can't help it. but, yeah.
I'm waiting for the guy with the snowplow to show up right now.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine that. I mean, this is terrible. I'm California girl, you know, for my whole life. And don't know really what to do with snow. Have only seen it maybe once or twice and not in a, you know, didn't have to drive in it. Well, we did drive in it to get up to the mountains, but you know what I mean? Just not the same type of snow that you have every day and look forward to. But so you had a white Christmas?
Sort of. We had a little bit of snow before Christmas, but just now everything is white. The trees are absolutely covered, you know, white. They're, everything is frosted and white. And, you know, the car is trapped, and the driveway has got about 6 inches. And I can't go anywhere until the snowplow shows up.
Uh-oh. All right, you're stranded.
Well, here I am.
Well, good. I'm glad you are, because if you were out running around, I wouldn't probably have to, I would have had to find somebody else, no doubt.
Yeah.
And I have to say that, I mean, I loved the concept of the book. But the minute I opened it up, I can't say enough good things about it. It is such a wonderful collection of information that once I started reading it, I was just like, oh my God, this is good. This is good. but you didn't start out to be an herbalist. It was more like divine intervention in a sense. And it's a lovely story on how you went from art history to herbalist. And if you wouldn't mind sharing that journey, I think it would be of interest to people, because it's another example of we all will find our path if we just take time to open up, be flexible, and listen, right?
Yes. When I do readings, I usually read that chapter, and that gets everybody's imagination. But, yeah, I mean, I was studying art history. I was an art history major, and I went to Temple University, and they gave me a scholarship because I was a straight-A student, a presidential scholar, and they said, you're going to Rome. And I said, I don't want to go to Rome. I want to study American photography. And they said, nope, you're going to study Renaissance art. You're going to Rome. And
wow.
I was like, okay. You know, and right there, you know, I should have had a clue, because I already, you know, I didn't know what was happening. They gave me the money, they gave me the ticket, they sent me to Rome. And I studied for a while in Rome at the Herziana Library, and I went around, like, looking at all the different statues and paintings and things that were available, and went to the Vatican and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to go to Assisi because I wanted to look at the frescoes by Giotto, mm-hmm. at the cathedral in Assisi. So off I went. I took the train, and I went into the cathedral, and I started looking at these frescoes, and they showed the life of St. Francis, but what was strange was there was a lot of gold leaf. So you had this really simple little monk in brown robes, and then there was gold leaf all over the place, and something just didn't seem right about that. So I looked around the cathedral, and there was this little monk who was standing in the doorway, and I walked up to him, and I said, gee, these frescoes are really nice, but I'd like to know more about the real St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, go to San Maceo. And I said, what is San Maceo? And he said, don't ask any questions, just go. So he pointed down the road, and I started walking. And then there was this little wooden sign pointing off to the right, and painted on it said San Maceo, pointing into these bushes. And there was literally just a little muddy path through the bushes. So I followed the path and came out, and there was this, it opened up into this medieval collection of buildings. They were stone buildings, and there were these mostly German students just kind of lolling around on the grass. And they saw me coming, and they said, oh, have you come here to live? And I said, I don't know. What is this place? And then they told me. And so I stayed for a few days, and then I went back to Rome, packed up all my stuff, came back to Assisi, and lived in the community for a while. It was a Franciscan community. Mm-hmm. But it was, it was a real Franciscan community, the way St. Francis would have had it, because there was no hot water. It was just cold water. The women were in one building, men were in another, and you slept on straw mattresses, and there was a big communal building that was for cooking and eating, and the animals were allowed to wander wherever they wanted, so there were chickens and ducks wandering in and out of the dining hall all the time. I mean, the animals just had free rein, very Franciscan kind of thing. Right. And on Wednesdays and Sundays, we fasted. Mm-hmm. And you were allowed to have water or herbal tea. That was it. So that was called wandering in the desert. And the idea was that you were supposed to just have your herbal tea or whatever and then just start walking and have no preconceived idea about where you were going or what was going to happen. You were just supposed to start walking. And so one day I just took off and I started walking up the hills, and I got to Mount Subasio, which is this mountain where St. Francis used to hang out. And I kept walking and walking and walking, and I kept going up until I was above the tree line. And there was nothing up there but grass and then this one little pine tree. I remember this one little pine tree and grass. That was it.
Aww.
Then this huge storm came up, and it was thunder, lightning, and snow.
Ah.
Thunder, snow, yeah. And that was me up there with the grass
with the little tree.
And the pine tree. And so I just wrapped myself around the tree, which is really stupid because that was probably the worst thing to do, but I did. And I hung out with the tree until the storm passed over, and I remember looking at my shoulders, and my shoulders were caked with snow.
Oh,
I remember
wow.
that. So I came down the hill. I mean, you can imagine the energy. After lightning and everything, I was filled with energy. So I came down the hill, singing at the top of my lungs, and still with snow caked on my shoulders. I was soaking wet, and I did get really sick after that. But anyway, I came down the hill, and at the bottom of the hill, right across from San Maceo, is the convent of San Damiano. And that was where St. Clair lived. And there's also this little chapel that St. Francis built with his own hands. And I went into the chapel that he built, and it was pre-Gothic, so it was Romanesque. So it was very dark in there. You know, no stained glass windows or anything like that. It was completely dark. I went into the darkness, sat down, and all of a sudden I heard this voice, and the voice basically said, everything you've been doing up until now has been for status and intellect and to please your parents. You're supposed to be working with plants.
Wow.
And I just kind of went, oh, yeah. it made total sense. And it's weird because I had never thought about that before. It just wasn't anything I had thought of. I was on track to becoming an art history professor. That was what I was supposed to do. You know, I was writing my thesis, all that. That had never dawned on me, right? But as soon as I heard it, I knew it was correct. Mm-hmm. And I started mentally, I'm sitting there throwing out, oh, my God, I have to stop my degree. My parents are going to kill me, you know. And this is kind of, it's very similar to kind of the process that St. Francis went through. He did the same thing. He was the son of a very well-to-do merchant, and he turned his back. He was the heir to the whole, the commercial fortune and the business, and he just turned his back on the whole thing and started preaching naked in the middle of the town square, which pretty much put an end to the whole cloth selling business. He was an interesting guy. He also used to preach to birds and wolves and talk to fire and talk to the sun and the moon. And, you know, so anyway, I mentally, discarded all that stuff and came back to the States. And sure enough, everybody was mad at me. My parents were furious. The school was really upset. Everybody was mad at me, but I just knew it was what I was supposed to do. So, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
messy. And people think that you have to know exactly what you're doing from day one and then go find it. Well, sometimes it finds you when it's supposed to.
Well, I think the fasting, you know, Native Americans do that. They do vision quests, you know, and I've done vision quests with Native Americans also. But, I mean, that whole, you really, the fasting and the removing yourself from your usual routine, I think, is incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
And it just, it lets you find out your soul's purpose. Because, you know, we're born, we're born with a specific purpose, all of us, that is dictated from the soul level. But we get born into society, and then the school is trying to tell you one thing, and your family's trying to tell you something else, and then your business, your job, you know, the society, everything, everybody's trying to tell you what you're supposed to do. And then your soul's purpose can get lost. So I think it's really important at least once in your life, if not two or three times, to just leave everything behind, go to a completely, you know, different space and fast and allow that voice, you know, to come out.
And it does. It does.
Yeah.
Now, the word herbalist may be a bit misleading in that one could get the impression that it's the herbs themselves that are the only things that you work with. But you work with all sorts of plants and trees and, right? I mean, everything that God grows, right?
Yeah, I like to tell my students a weed is a plant whose uses have yet to be appreciated. So every plant, every tree... And the same thing goes for minerals and water and all kinds of things. But everything has a property, a healing property, you know, if we only know how to use it, you know. And, I mean, I've studied homeopathy as well. And if you've studied homeopathy, you know that that even goes to include things like poisons, you know, arsenic, mercury, lead, you know. I mean, everything, if you use it properly... We all come from the same place. We all come from stars. We're all star matter. We're all related. You know, when you say all my relations, we're related to every molecule and every atom on the planet. We all came from the same place. So it's you just have to learn the arts. There's arts involved.
Exactly. I got a question in the chat room. Do you speak to plants? Or can you speak
I
to
plants? I try to listen to plants.
There
yeah,
you
speaking,
go.
Well, I do speak to plants. I mean my house plants, you know, my pet plants. And my pet trees, the ones that I take care of and prune and nourish and things like that. Yes, I do speak to them. But in terms of working with healing energies, there's a whole principle called the Doctrine of Signatures, which is something I write about in the book.
Right.
And it's an old medieval plant classification system because up until a few centuries ago, most people couldn't read. There were only a tiny group of people who could read, and reading was very high tech, you know, so monks could read and maybe some kings could read, but, you know, most people just couldn't read. So the Doctrine of Signatures teaches you to look at the shape of the leaf, the color of the flower, the type of soil the plant is growing in. Is it in the shade? Is it in the sun? You know, what does it taste like? You know, everything about it. What does the root look like? Does it have a big root? Does it have a thread-like root? You know, and you can put all those things together and you can figure out exactly what a plant is for. And so that's a way... It's not listening with your ears entirely, although I do that too. I sometimes hang out with oak trees and listen. But it's more like using all your senses, your touch, your sense of smell, your eyesight, taste, you know.
Right.
And getting messages that way. That's how I do it.
Yeah. Well, the book is broken down into four sections, a wildcrafting primer, exploring invisible dimensions of the plant world, enjoying nature's bounty, and formula making. And each section is loaded down with info and recipes. I mean, I can't even begin to talk about all the information that's in the book. And the art illustrations of the old botanicals and herbs that date back, before 1923, are gorgeous. And the thing of it is that the book and the artwork is done on glossy paper. Mm-hmm. And really, if the book weren't paperback on the outside and you were just looking in the inside, you would swear you were reading a really expensive hardback book. And that was really, really cool. Just that in of itself. Yeah.
Very nice that the publisher did that. I mean, I picked out those illustrations, and mm-hmm. I wanted the old illustrations because in the 1800s, when they illustrated, if they had one picture of a plant, it wasn't like taking a photograph today where you get a frozen image of a plant at one point in its existence, you know, when mm-hmm. it's blooming or something. Those images are actually better for plant identification because each plant, if you look carefully, it has the seed, the flower, the root, the mature plant, you know, all in one drawing.
Uh-huh.
And
exactly.
Sometimes the old black and white drawings are incredibly valuable, too. They're more, they have more information in them than a photograph would.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is just, I was just like smiling. Every time I turned a page, I was smiling. And, you know, it's hard for an old witch to smile. So he did a good deed. Now, since we can't cover the whole book in a short hour, and we don't want to cover the whole book anyway, there were things that jumped out at me, and I thought we could talk about a few of those. And also, as we go along, chat room, if anybody there has any more questions for Ellen about what we're talking about or about plants in general, just send me a private message as usual and I will pass them on. But
can I just say something?
Sure.
This book is called Secret Medicines from Your Garden. I have another little book called The Secret Medicines of Your Kitchen. And I don't know if you've seen that one, but if you go online, you can find that. That was published in London, actually, but it's available on Amazon. I also have it at my website, EllenEverettHopman.com. But Secret Medicines from Your Kitchen, it's a small book in that it's a thin little book, but it's also gorgeously illustrated. And what it does is it teaches you how to use the foods and spices that you already have in the kitchen to make home remedies.
Oh, perfect.
So you don't have to go out and buy anything, you know.
Oh, great. Great, great, great. Thank you for interjecting that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's begin with me saying that I've always been a big fan of herbal remedies and natural ingredients, both in healing and in food. I really kind of think that all the artificial ingredients and preservatives and what we eat these days are dangerous in the long run, and over-the-counter remedies we buy are quite costly. And God knows what else they put in them, you know, not very holistic. And so, the stuff that we can make at home and grow in our gardens most often gets the same results. And within your formula section of the book, there are like 70 pages worth, I counted, of constitutional prescribing with hundreds of plants, their properties, what they're used for. And that section alone is amazingly comprehensive. What do you consider the benefits of growing our own medicine and making it as opposed to hopping over to the pharmacy?
Well, I'm in an interesting situation. I live in the woods, so I can't even grow my own stuff. I have to wildcraft.
Mm.
And that's why in the book there's a big emphasis on wildcrafting.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to go out walking in fields, walking in forests, you know, and finding things that I then bring home.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, one of the things is, you know, we're all stretched financially, as you just mentioned, and yet nature is providing all this stuff for free.
Uh-huh.
We just know how to use it. I mean, you're in California. I don't even live in California, but I was invited to teach at the Philo School of Herbal Energetics, which is up near Mendocino.
Oh, up north,
I've been there twice now, so I had to, you know, figure out, oh my God, what am I going to teach them? They're in California, you know. I'm from New England, you know, so I had to look up what I did, and this is what I recommend that everybody do. There's this fabulous book, well, you can use my book, but there's also this great book by Daniel Moerman, M-O-E-R-M-A-N. It's called Native American Medicinal Plants.
Ah.
So what I do now when I'm going into an area where I'm not familiar with the herbs there, mm-hmm. I look up which tribe was indigenous to the area, and up there it was the Pomo.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look up which plants the Pomo were using. And that's how I found out about how to use redwoods, California Bay Laurel, mm-hmm. What else? Rosemary, eucalyptus, although eucalyptus is not native. It was brought in, as you probably know.
Yeah.
You know, they used oak bark. They used all kinds of things. And the way I think is if they used it for thousands of years, it obviously worked, because they're not going to hang on to something unless it works, right?
Exactly.
So I was able to put together a beautiful recipe for a salve, which I went to Northern California to teach people how to use the stuff in their backyard. Is what I'm trying to
Great.
Say. Because yep. they had redwoods in the backyard. They had rosemary in the backyard. They had bay laurel in the backyard, you know. They had eucalyptus right down the street, you know.
Yeah. We but have that, a lot I think, of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that kind of thing is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think everybody needs to just figure out, well, you don't want to gather things from close to a road, so that's a problem. You have to be uh-huh. at least 500 feet from a road. But other than that, you really need to figure out what are the native indigenous plants that were used in your area for thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
and learn them.
Right.
You know, and so wherever you are, if you're listening in England, if you're listening in South Africa, if you're listening in Massachusetts, if you're listening in California, it doesn't matter. Just get to yeah. learn the things that grow right around you. Because nature is always trying to feed us. Nature is always trying to heal us. Nature is constantly trying to give us things for nothing. And mm-hmm. we're being totally hypnotized and deceived by advertising to think that we have to go out and buy things all the time. I mean, I'll give you an example. I live in an oak forest. Mm-hmm. And I remember in 2008... I was working, I had a job, you know, the whole company collapsed, 100 people were laid off, everybody was in a panic, you know, the economy was crashing. That mm-hmm. year, the oak trees had what's called a mast year, where millions of acorns were just carpeting the ground.
Wow.
And I looked at that and I said, oh my God, there's more food here. You could feed an army with this, but
yeah.
nobody knows how to do it, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
anyway, that's one of the things I do. I gather acorns, I process them, I make flour, I make acorn flour, and I have recipes in the book, by the way.
Yes.
Acorn bread, acorn cake. The acorn cake is awesome.
Oh God, yeah.
But if you can't get acorns, you know, out in the wild, which is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Korean grocery stores have acorn flour.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting. I haven't tried that. You know, one of the things people worry about when we talk about this is poisoning themselves. And you do include a glossary of contraindications as well in the book. And you're not telling people to self-diagnose and treat themselves either. We should make this clear. And I think the first sentence in the book is very telling. I mean, you say, if a medical situation arises, please contact a competent health professional. But there are simple things, like simple drawing poultices to draw out a splinter, or remedies for minor things. Like, instead of taking Gas-X and spending, what, $85 for Gas-X, you can prevent gas and bloating with cumin. You know, the seeds or the leaves, as you say in the book, can be chewed, and you can also make cumin tea. And then there's also like a cure for diarrhea instead of Pepto-Bismol, cinnamon tea. I mean, there's so much of this kind of information in there, and it's not stuff that people can't get their hands on.
Right. I mean, that's why yeah. the other books, Secret Medicines of Your Kitchen. That's mm-hmm. exactly why I wrote that one, because it's like, mm-hmm. hey, just go to your spice shelf. Stuff is already there. That's what that's all about, you know.
Exactly, and that's the beauty of it. So people are not going to, you know, run and get something that's going to harm them. I mean, you know, read the book. Everything is there. It's like you said, a primer. And if you can read, you can get it right. And you can do all these recipes and potions and formulas and stuff. It's really amazing. But you know one thing that amazed me that I didn't know about, and there's probably a whole lot that I haven't, I don't know about, but I didn't really know about herbal astrology and planetary herbology. And I found that really fascinating. And you've got a list of the different astrological nature of certain plants and stuff. Tell us a little bit about that, because that was like, whoa, very cool.
Yeah, well, that's herbal alchemy when you start getting into that, mm-hmm. Because that's when you start working with plants kind of on a psychic level.
Uh-huh.
For example, there are herbs that are herbs of the sun. You know, uh-huh. herbs of Leo and the sun. So if you had a client, or even for yourself, if you had somebody that was lacking courage and they needed more charisma and they needed to have a more authoritarian attitude, or they needed to be more in their power or something like that, as you're putting together the formula, you might start thinking about, oh, they need a little Leo in there, you know, they need some mm-hmm. Self-mastery, kingship, queenship, you know. So that's just one level. Or if somebody is too hard and authoritarian, you might think, oh, they could use a little lunar, you know, softening or something. So let me think about some lunar herbs, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like that, you know. And, I mean, it's all divided up. Different parts of the body are ruled by plants that are associated with different planets, but I like to think of it as psychological or spiritual alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little deeper than just, you know, saying this herb is good for that. You know,
right,
it's not
right.
beyond this for that.
Uh-huh. Kind of. Yeah, I was like, wow, this is very cool. And in fact, I was on somebody's show this morning, and they said, well, who is your guest tonight? And she's an astrologer. And so I said, have you ever heard of, you know, like, I really know what I'm talking about. But, you know, I told her about the book and everything, and she was, like, fascinated as well. So I think it's very, very cool that is in there as well. And the other thing that was interesting was plant spirits. Let's talk a little bit about working with plant spirits. How do we go about interacting with them, the plants?
Well, we're all doing it this time of year. We have Christmas trees all over the place, right?
Yeah.
That's one example. So, you know, the spirit of the pine and the immortality and we're affirming that life will continue even in the middle of the dark. And so we bring this evergreen into the house, and we're having a spiritual experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are you referring to that kind of plant spirit work, or are you referring, what are we referring to here?
Well, yeah, that basically, because, you know, you talk to some people who believe that everything, every living thing has a spirit.
Right.
And then there are those that say, nah, you know, nah.
Well,
but
everything does have a spirit. I mean, the thing that I communicate with most easily is trees, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I always say that the trees are the people that stand still, and we're the trees that walk around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, their DNA, our DNA is a double helix that's like a spiral. Their uh-huh. DNA looks the same, except it's like ladder. It's like a ladder. It's just straight. It doesn't spiral. Uh-huh. But they still have that double helix, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I've always had this ability. Each tree to me is like a complete individual. I think that when most people look out at a bunch of trees, they just see a bunch of trees, you know, a bunch of green. Yeah. But that's not what I see. What I see is individual people with individual personalities, each of them. And there's a saying that I came up with. I'm a druid. That's my spiritual path.
Right.
So I like to say that every tree is a church for a druid.
There you
and
go.
As long as I can be with a tree, you know, I'm in church. And
uh-huh.
tree, you know, because they have this amazing, the roots go down to the underworld of the she or the fairies, you know, the ancestors. Their roots are down there. They have their trunk, which is in the middle world, which is where we walk around. Then they have their branches up in the sky world, and they're communicating with the gods and
mm-hmm.
the stars and the moon and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have the three worlds. Every tree is communicating with the three worlds. And, you know, a birch tree has a very different personality from an oak.
Mm-hmm.
An oak tree has a different personality from certainly from a eucalyptus, or from a redwood. You know, they're all unique. And one of the things I do, I teach tree herbalism
mm-hmm.
weekend workshops. And always in the weekend, one of the things we do is I take people out into the forest and we communicate. I teach them to be in communion with a tree. And they get messages and they see pictures and, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you discussed deciduous trees for healing in the book and mentioned quite a few different ones. And, you know, these are the things that sometimes people don't think about. But I kind of like, well, you know, nature is our temple. And just getting out there, it changes a whole way of thinking. And it can be very refreshing to get out of the city and hang out with the plants, the trees, you know, the flowers.
Well,
it's just the
trees, you know, because they have this vertical, they pull up energy from the underworld. They
right.
pull down energy from the sky world. But their DNA, like I said, is like a ladder. So everything is very vertical. It's like
uh-huh.
this, the actual tree is actually less than paper thin. It's this, like a straw, and it's being held up by cellulose because the cellulose in the center of the tree is dead. The bark on the outside is dead. The only part that's alive is this very thin tube. And if you put somebody, and I do this, if you have somebody who's very troubled,
uh-huh.
they could be manic depressive, so they're very unbalanced, or they could be grieving, or they could be somebody who's severely addicted, you know, you take that person and you just sit them down next to a tree and you don't have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You just put them next to the tree and leave them there. You know, just sit, you know, you could sit like 5 or 10 feet off and just park them there by the tree and just leave them there for 20 minutes. And this whole thing starts to happen because literally the cells of their body are realigning because they're in the energy field of this vertical being that, you know, that's what it tends to straighten everything out. So if
mm-hmm.
if you're emotionally in disarray and your energetic patterns are very haphazard and all over the place, the tree will literally straighten it out. I've seen this happen.
Wow. Got another question from the chat room. She wants to know, when trees communicate with you, do you hear them, do you feel them, or is it like telepathy?
I get images. Rarely. Sometimes I feel what they're feeling. For example, one time I was walking down the path and I felt this anger, which was the last thing I expected because I'm in the middle of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and it was coming from this birch tree, and I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just stood there with the tree, and I'm like, "Why are you so angry?" You know, and I didn't know what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I continued down the path, and I noticed that all along the path, the logging company had taken a hatchet and gouged out these gashes in, like, about every 10 feet. They took a huge gash out of a tree, slapped red paint on it. Mm. They had a yellow plastic triangle with their logo on it and a huge roofing nail, and they hammered the plastic into the slash with the red paint. And that was like every 10 feet, and I said, oh, no wonder. And, I mean, that happened. That was pretty dramatic, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just, I get pictures, you know, they send me images. I mean, most often I get pictures. They tell me about what's happening in the landscape and, you know, in the bioregion, what's going on or what they're trying to do. Like the Redwoods told me that they were trying to communicate with the stars and that every time a Redwood gets cut down, the Earth loses the ability to maintain connection with the star system.
Wow. Well, the Redwoods, I mean, people may not have seen them in person, but even if you've seen them on some kind of a travelogue or something, I mean, they are magnificent, absolutely magnificent.
Well, if you pay attention, if you really look at a Redwood and how it's structured, their roots are actually very shallow. And what they do is they reach out to the tree next to them, and they all twine their roots together, and that's how they hold themselves up.
Ah.
And, you know, you get this incredible trunk that goes on and on and on and on, and then the needles, I guess you'd call them, are way up at the top. So there's, you know, the action is way up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing literally is they are communicating with, they're like antennas for the Earth. This is what they told me. And that's their job, is to, you know, keep the Earth in connection with these distant star systems. And every time you cut one down, it's like cutting down an observatory or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they told me.
Yeah, well, that makes good sense.
And we're still cutting them down, which is unbelievable.
I know. It's just, you know, the modern age, we just don't have the same appreciation for nature. You know, back how many hundreds of years when we were the wise women, we were the ones that knew the herbal remedies. We were the, you know, midwives and everything. They considered that we were very intelligent then, and they would call upon us, and then things changed a lot and never got back to basics. I mean, now with holistic medicine, and you see different documentaries sometimes of people going into the rainforest and these specialists that do experiments with different leaves and bark and things like that. But it just, I think in some ways, people were healthier when they were using plants and trees and things for medicine, because there was always something for everything. You just had to know what it was. And that's kind of a lost art these days.
Yeah, and people were very connected to the actual soil and the land where they were living. I'm much more interested in learning what grows in my immediate area than I am. Like, for example, there are people who love learning about Ayurveda, which is great, from India, or they love learning Chinese medicine, you know. I haven't really been drawn to that. I mean, I know a little bit about it, and I've studied Chinese five-element theory and all that. But I'm much more interested in being able to just go out and find what I need. Even now in the middle of winter, I'm sitting here snowed in. If I was sick or if somebody was sick around me, I could go out into the woods right now, right after a blizzard, and I could find medicine out there.
Yeah.
Because I know my area, you know. But if you take me and you plop me down, you know, in Alaska or something, or Southern California.
Well, you're learning there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know a little bit about Northern California now because I've been there twice.
But, yeah. Well, we got a little more desert down here, so you'd have to learn about the cactus and the yucca and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing that I would know how to use in your, well, I would know eucalyptus and I would know oak.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, just with those two, there's a lot you can do.
Well, you'd have to figure out what you could do with palm trees, because we have millions of palm trees. We don't, you know, a lot of places we don't have like real trees. We have palm trees lining the boulevards.
Are they medicinal? Are palm trees medicinal?
I haven't a clue. I don't know.
Dates are medicinal. They're very moistening. They're very nourishing. You know, dates are good for you. I think they're good for the bowels. But again, you know, your area would be, I would have to start all over again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have aloe, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we have tons of different kinds of aloe.
Yeah, aloe, you would have aloe for the skin, and also, it would be very good for the bowels, for laxative effect, and for healing burns, and things like that. And then you'd have eucalyptus, which would be a good disinfectant externally and internally.
Right.
Oak bark, which is a great wound wash.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I could probably survive.
I think you would, and I think you would thrive. Unless you're out in Death Valley where it's 100 and, you know, 87 degrees. Yeah, that would be a little too much.
You also have the ocean and,
do.
Salt. Salt water is incredibly healing.
Yeah, and seaweed, plankton, and all that.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, not to eat the seaweed anymore, right?
Well, not the one that's in the ocean, no. We get the ones in the store.
Where do you think they get it?
No. It probably comes from normal places. And yeah, because I remember as a kid, you know, going in the ocean and these weird little seaweeds, they look like chili peppers and things in like a chili pepper head and an octopus tail. I mean, it was really kind of cool. But we knew not to eat them even then. And that was 100 years ago.
That's not what I'm talking about. It's Fukushima.
Oh, yes. That too. Yeah.
Has reached the West Coast now.
Yes, this we know. It's horrible.
Right. And, so, I mean, I've been thinking about this. So what are we supposed to do, you know? That radiation has gotten all the way to Scotland, as far as I know. But you can't use seaweed from the West Coast.
Yeah, I know. See, modern culture has just turned everything topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
One more thing I want to talk about, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention animal spirit medicines, because most of the people that listen to the show are big animal people. And you've got a lot of preparations in the book, and they come from Native American healers, correct?
Well, I learned animal spirit medicine from Matthew Wood, and Matthew Wood learned it from his teacher, who was Native American, yes. So... that's the lineage. I got it from Matthew. But it is, yes, those are genuine teachings. And I've had some people express surprise that that stuff is in print. You know,
what did I miss? Why? Nothing surprised me, but go ahead. Tell me.
Well, I mean, those are teachings that were passed down in the oral tradition.
Like sacred teaching.
Yes, and they were usually passed down from teacher to student.
Okay.
But, you know, I asked Matthew, I said, what am I allowed to print? And he told me, and I did. but it's the real deal, folks. And it's beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Talk a little bit of bear medicine, snake medicine, all the different headings.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, you know, when you study it, it makes beautiful sense. I mean, bear medicine, you know, bears eat a lot, right? And then they look for certain plants before they go into hibernation, which are all about preparing their digestive tract so that they don't feel hunger. Mm-hmm. And actually those same plants, like OSHA, for example, is used before you go into a fast. If you do a traditional, at least I've done Ojibwe Cree 4-day fast with no food and no water, and we went into it, we started with OSHA, and I wasn't hungry.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And but that's what the bears do. That and that's part of bear medicine. And these are things that affect the stomach. And the stomach, of course, is the center of power. And bear medicine people are very powerful people. And they're also good mothers. And, you know, there's a lot to it. And then mm-hmm. as far as, like, snake medicine, everybody knows about echinacea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Snake medicines are medicines that clear poisons out of your system. And they're medicines that were used traditionally for snake bite. And it was just a way of classifying things, you know. So if they said, oh, that's a snake medicine, then everybody would know, yeah, that's what you use if you have a severe infection, if you have a snake bite, you know, you use a snake medicine, you know, like that.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, there are so many different facets to this book. And it's definitely, you know, read the information. There's all these pages of what and how and what, and then recipes, as you said.
A lot of recipes. Oh, and I should mention also, some people may be familiar with, my first book was called Tree Medicine, Tree Magic, and it came out in the 80s, and it's been out of print for a long time. That book is going to be re-released.
Wow.
It's being edited right now. But it should be out, I would think, late spring. So if people like that book, it's expanded now, and it has a lot of recipes. So for every tree that I talk about in that book, I have how to eat the tree.
And that doesn't include chopping it down. It's borrowing a little bark or whatever, right?
Exactly. And you take from the bark of the branch, you never take the bark from the trunk because that would kill the tree.
Right.
Yeah.
There's just something I was just looking. I'm going to need that pretty soon. Honey throat syrup. I'm sitting here. My throat's going dry. My nose.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole chapter on honey.
I know. And I do have some honey here. So I'm going to have to look this up a little bit clearer. When I read the book during the week, I felt fine. But now I have a book that's going to cure me or at least help, which is really, really good. Do you teach classes? Where can people, like, join in, if possible?
Well, I have a six-month class that I teach in Western Massachusetts every year. It goes October to April. And then people invite me to teach other places. I'll be teaching in New Hampshire this summer. I have two different gigs in New Hampshire this summer, and then I'm going to be at the Women's Herbal Conference in August in New England. And like I said, I come out to California when I get invited. So, I mean, if people invite me, I come.
We have a state park here called Malibu Creek, not far. And they often have speakers coming in, authors and things. You do that kind of thing as well, right?
Right, but I mean, they have to fly me in.
Right,
can't. Yeah, no, that's part of the deal. They have to fly me in, they have to put me up, they have to feed me.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, a friend of mine is a docent at Malibu Creek, for example, and I don't know if people know who Bear Grylls is, but he's the guy that goes out and he's a survivalist and tells you how to, you know, if you get dropped off in the middle of the ocean and there's an island, but how to live for a week, right? And people like him, I mean, maybe because this is California, but he was out there and she was just, you know, over the top. And there are lots of people that come out and do that kind of talk. So, you know, people should know that they can get a hold of you and you would be available. And speaking of that, where can people get a hold of you again? I know you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, my website is just Ellen Evert. That's E-L-L-E-N, Evert, E-V, as in Victor, E-R-T. Hopman, H-O-P as in Paul, M-A-N.com. And just go to ElwynEvertHopman.com and send me a message. I'm also on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. Where else? I'm on LinkedIn, but I never go there, so don't.
Me either.
It's just not user-friendly. I know.
I mean, I'm there, but I keep getting requests from people. I'm like, you know, I don't know what to do with this, but yeah. So you're easy to find, and your books are easy to find also. Where can people find them?
Well, everywhere. Mm-hmm. You can go to my website, you can go to Amazon, you can go to Barnes & Noble. Just Google my name and all the books will come up, or go on Amazon. I actually have an author page on Amazon as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have an author page at Llewellyn. I probably have I think I have an author page at Inner Traditions. I'm not sure.
No doubt.
I'm all over the place. Just Google my name and stuff will come up.
Yeah, well, that's probably the easiest way to do it. And again, so many accolades from this book, so much good response that I got just posting the banner. And, you know, I don't always go crazy about books. I mean, I like a lot, but this one really blew me away.
This book, I don't know what it is about this book, but this book actually got an award. And it's the first book I've ever had get an award. The International Herb Association named it the Book of the Year for 2016.
Wow. I can understand why. Yeah. It's one that you know, if anybody is interested at all in this, this is the book to go get, because, again, so many different facets, so much different information. I'm so happy they sent this to me. I mean, I looked at it and I went, oh boy, you know, which I don't often do, but I like talking about this kind of thing. And I was so happy to read it. So I'm recommending it to anybody who can hear me, because it's well worth getting. It's just beautiful. And on that happy note, my voice is starting to go, and I don't want to have a coughing jag for the last 2 minutes of the show. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I may get back in touch with you for future shows, because the subject is fascinating and everybody in the chat room seems to be enjoying it. So if that's all right with you, we may have you back.
Yeah, that would be nice. And I actually have two books coming out this year. I have the Tree Medicine, Tree Magic expanded version from Pendrag Publishing, and they're actually in Southern California. Somewhere near Los Angeles.
I've heard that, yeah.
Pendrag. And then I have a book that I'm just putting the finishing touches on now about New England witches.
Hey! Yeah, that just perked me up, too.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we have things to talk about.
There will always be things to talk about. I'm so happy about that. Well... We will definitely do this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for saying yes. And, you know, it's funny because I was actually going to cancel the show tonight because of the way I'm feeling. And I thought, no, I read this book. I don't care if I have to, you know, do this show in sign language. We're doing this show because I really wanted to get the information out. So I'm glad you were here. And I'm glad everybody was in the chat room and those that are going to be listening to the podcasts. Thank you too. And Ellen, stay on the line just for a couple seconds when we get off so I can give you some information about where you're going to find the podcast. And till next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at this same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2014. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.